You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Entering the final 25 games of the regular season, the Twins are knocking on the door of a playoff berth, a position very few outside of Minnesota thought the club would find themselves in here in the second week of September. Welcome to MLB.com Extras Minnesota Twins. I'm Matt Wehmeyer, and for Anthony Kastrovitz on a Tuesday, joined by Twins reporter Rhett Bollinger. Rhett, a pleasure as always, and like I said, the Twins enter Tuesday just a game and a half back of the second wild card spot in the American League. Obviously, teams are ultimately going to be judged on their bottom line results, but given the way this club has already exceeded expectations, is this season going to go down as a success in 2015, no matter what the outcome?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the expectations coming in, I think a lot of people still have the Twins pegged as a last place team. A lot of young players this year have kind of come up and contributed. So in some ways, they're kind of ahead of schedule. I think this year, the Twins are hoping to kind of have a better year, obviously, than last year, and then kind of maybe build on this year and be competitive next year. But so far, they've been competitive throughout the season. So that's definitely a success. And like I said, the young guys, guys like Miguel Sano, have played really well. Eddie Rosario, Trevor May, Byron Buxton's got a taste of the majors. Hasn't played as well as those guys. But at least some of these younger guys we've been talking about for a long time are finally here and contributing. This is probably a little bit ahead of schedule and going into next year. Definitely some momentum with the way they played this season.
Rhett, can you quantify the impact that Paul Molitor's made at the helm of this team and the success that they've had so far?
He's definitely made a huge impact as a manager here, kind of a new voice leading them. A lot of attention to details. A very smart guy and one of the players definitely respect as a Hall of Fame player. But he can relate to the players. He's always been that talk of, you know, Hall of Fame manager, how hard it is to relate to guys who, you know, aren't as good as he was as a player. But he doesn't have that problem at all. He's very understanding, great listener. He worked in the minor leagues with the Twins as an instructor for a long time. So he kind of already knew a lot of these guys and could relate to them. And his, you know, in-game tactician skills have been very good as well. He's definitely a major reason for this turnaround.
And, you know, when you look at former players who inherit managerial jobs, you take a look at Ryan Sandberg, who kind of flamed out in Philadelphia. Then you look at a guy like Mike Matheny, who's had nothing but success running the Cardinals. You mentioned the minor league experience that Molitor had. How much of a difference has that made in him being able to better transition into this position, whereas other guys may not have that on their resume and they perhaps struggle?
Yeah, it definitely makes a big difference. I mean, this guy worked with a lot of the minor league guys, both on hitting and especially defensively and base running. So guys like Byron Buxton, he'd been around, you know, previously. Same with Rosario. He'd known these guys for years. Same with Sano. I think he saw Sano pretty much right when he got signed as a 16-year-old just to kind of get a feel for him. So these guys already know him. Like I said, he kind of knows the struggles that it takes, you know, especially early on in their career. Because, I mean, other than Sano, you know, you're going to have your bumps and bruises. And even Sano has kind of gone through a little bit of a strikeout binge here recently. So he kind of knows how to roll with that and to relate to these guys. And even guys like Brian Dozier and Trevor Plouffe, he's known for a long time. And because of that, there's just a trust level because these players have known them, you know, known him since they were, you know, pretty much teenagers. And they can trust him. And like I said, just knowing how smart he is as a manager, how smart he was as a player, is something they can definitely appreciate. And they know that, you know, kind of things he picks up during a game, whether it's, you know, a tell from a pitcher, if he's tipping pitches, that kind of thing, or even just, you know, stealing bases and helping out with the base running. The little things he sees during the game and kind of tell his players definitely helps too, just from being around baseball his whole life, you know, having a 20-year career. And then after that, you know, he was also on some major league coaching staff with the Twins and Mariners before. So he definitely knows a lot about baseball.
Yeah, no question. Understatement of the day. And to have him succeed, Ron Gardenhire, a near perfect fit out there in the Twin Cities, Paul Molitor, the manager of the Twins. And speaking of Molitor, with regards to the outfield configuration, now that Aaron Hicks is back from injury, he's played a handful of games since a AAA rehab stint in Rochester. Paul Molitor has said he intends to kind of mix and match with the many outfielders at his disposal right now. But in your opinion, would he be better served to establish a starting trio given where this club is in the playoff hunt?
I think right now mixing and matching makes sense just because Buxton, I think, is the best defender of the kind of all the guys they have there, putting him out in center field as a rookie, but still not even hitting 200 yet. He's kind of still kind of figuring out the ropes there offensively. And Torii Hunter had been in a slump there for a while, but has been getting out of it recently. A couple, you know, three-hit game and a double and a hit against the Royals on Monday night. He's kind of snapping out of that slump. So I think if they rotate pretty much those four guys in, the all-defense outfield is one they use in Houston where, you know, you put Aaron Hicks in right field and you put Buxton in center field and you put Rosario in left field. And you've got, you know, a ton of range out there. And all three of those guys in the game they did that in on Saturday. contributed offensively in the win as well. But like I said, with Hunter and his experience on the stretch, I think they're going to still kind of put him in right field here and there. And then those games, they can kind of figure out if they want to play, you know, sit Buxton or maybe even sit Rosario against a tough lefty. So the nice thing is because they are, you know, Hicks is a switch hitter. You've got Hunter and Buxton are right-handed, and then you got Rosario as a left-hander. You can kind of mix and match based on matchups, which makes sense. So I think it's just going to kind of be a day-to-day thing, whatever Molitor thinks works the best. And so far, he's been making good decisions with that.
And Rhett, with regards to Torii Hunter, we know what kind of a guy he is, what kind of a career he's had. He's a very high-character guy, a selfless guy, but also obviously a very proud veteran. If it comes to a point where Paul Molitor has to say to Torii Hunter, you know what, we have to sit you. You know, you're not going to get a lot of playing time during the stretch. We got to go with the hot hands, the hot bats. Is there any concern that maybe Torii Hunter doesn't take this very well? Or again, given the kind of guy that he is there maybe more of an ease and a comfort level that if anybody is going to, you know, sacrifice their own personal good for the good of the team, it would be him?
I think you'd understand it. I think if you look back at the last 2 months almost since the All-Star break, he's definitely had a lot of time off. You know, they'll give him a day game off after a night game to keep him fresh. Matchup-wise, too, they'll kind of give him breaks. They'd play even guys like Shane Robinson over him in some games. So I think he knows that, you know, it's kind of almost the end of the road here. Potentially he could play next year. But I think he knows whatever best for the team is fine by him. Of course, he'd love to play every day and contribute, but he also knows that he's 4 years old now. But like I said, the nice thing is right now he definitely was in a big slump pretty much throughout July and August. But it's starting to heat up here in September, and the Twins could definitely use that. The one thing he hasn't really shown yet is the power. I don't think he's had a home run now in over a month, which was kind of the one thing he was really doing well throughout the first, you know, 4 months of the season. I think, you know, passing his home run total from the last 3 years. But so far hasn't done that recently. But I think if his back can get going, he can definitely be an asset out there. But I think if, you know, if it gets cool again and, you know, he wants to go with that young outfield, because the thing is the outfield of Rosario, Hicks, and Buxton kind of looks like that outfield of the future, the one they're going to use a lot next year and potentially the next, you know, 4 or 5 years or even longer. Although Max Kepler is another top prospect at AA, who's had a great year, who could figure into that mix too in the future. But I think Hunter, more than anything, just being a veteran, knowing what's best for the team, I think he'd be okay with that. I don't think he'd want to sit every day or anything like that, but I think right now the way they're working it, where he maybe misses a game, he gets a tough right-hander, or misses a day game after a night game, I think he's totally fine with that.
Twins reporter Rhett Bollinger joining us on MLB.com Extras, Minnesota Twins. And Rhett, along with Aaron Hicks, Logan Darnell also recalled from AAA Rochester, somewhat to his surprise a little bit from what he indicated. What kind of a role could he play in the bullpen, especially now that closer Glenn Perkins not on the club on this current road trip due to a back ailment?
Well, Darnell had a really nice session at the end of the year. He made 5 starts. Most of the year he was a reliever, and the last 5 starts, though, at the end of the year, he was lights out. Terry Ryan went to go see him in AAA Rochester, and on the reports, he said that was the best he's ever seen Darnell. And Darnell last year pitched well enough to see some time in the majors, make a few spot starts with the Twins, had a nice year at AAA Rochester last year. And this year, he tried to use him as a kind of more as a reliever to kind of see if he could be kind of a situational lefty type. Had a nice year as a reliever, but really kind of picked it up again as a starter. So because he's stretched out, I think the plan is to kind of have him as a long reliever if they need to. Just because right now on their current roster, they don't really have anybody who could fill in as a long reliever. They called him up, and for the first couple days when he got called up, he wasn't available because he had started the previous day. But now he is available. I think we could see him in some long roles and even potentially to face some lefties if guys like Neil Cox or Brian Dunson have been using a couple days in a row. So I don't think you'll see too much time down the stretch, but it's just nice to have another arm up here to help out, especially if they kind of get into a bind where a starter only goes 2 or 3 innings.
And Rhett, starting pitcher Phil Hughes and reliever J.R. Graham both working their way back from injury. Give us the latest health updates on them.
Well, Phil Hughes is flying into Kansas City here tonight, Tuesday, and he's going to throw a simulated game on Wednesday, about 45 pitches against live hitters, and then maybe go back after that and throw into the bullpen for maybe 20 more pitches to get his pitch count up. Depending on how he does, there's a chance he could join the rotation as early as next week. Or they could decide to maybe have him do a rehab start with Double A Chattanooga, who are in the Double A playoffs right now. But it's kind of going to kind of see how Mike Pelfrey does on Wednesday. If Pelfrey turns another clunker, I think we could see Hughes take his spot in the rotation and maybe have Pelfrey go to the bullpen. So I think a lot of it too is just going to have to see how Pelfrey does and see how Hughes feels in that simulated game there on Wednesday. And then from there, J.R. Graham, Rule 5 guys, throw on here, bullpen on the road trip. He's eligible to come off the DL on Thursday. The Twins have an off day on Thursday, so the plan is to have him probably activated Friday in Chicago because he's healthy now. And then Ricky Nolasco is still out as well. He's progressed to throwing and running around on his ankle, which is a good thing, but I just don't know if he hasn't thrown a bullpen yet that he's going to be ready, you know, this year at all. I think he might be ruled out. The Twins haven't said that officially yet. Just kind of looking at the math, though, and the numbers, he might be out. But the good news is that Hughes and the Nets they could use will be back potentially as early as next week, and then Grant will be back by the weekend.
And, Rhett, you brought up Mike Pelfrey, of course, and he's in danger of potentially losing his spot in the rotation. As you mentioned, he's really struggled his last three starts, in ERA over 10 in that span. What do you attribute this to? Is it a guy just kind of wearing out in September? Is there something mechanically different from before these struggles? How do you kind of attribute these struggles?
Well, he says he's not wearing down. But at the same time, and this is a guy that had been hurt, you know, the last couple of years here. I mean, last year only threw a few innings. The year before that, too, he kind of was shut down with some injuries. So you got to wonder if kind of just the long season is kind of starting to wear on him because he has made all of his starts. He hasn't really missed any time this year. So his innings limit's kind of, not limit, but his innings count just kind of getting up there right now. So maybe he is wearing down a little bit. He claims that's not the case. For him, he thinks a little bit of it's just fastball command, kind of leaving his fastball over the middle of the plate. And Molitor kind of says that he thinks that more than anything, too, it's just that his off-speed pitches aren't going for strikes. So he can't really get ahead of hitters by throwing, like, you know, a first-pitch breaking ball or a first-pitch slider. And he's not able to put him away once you get two strikes. So right now he's kind of fighting through that. And, you know, he's still throwing hard. He still has that power sinker. But, you know, right now people are laying off the other pitches. And it's not really leading to very many deep starts. But he's kind of a lot of those starts where he goes, you know, 3 1/3 or 3 2/3, which hurts the bullpen. So, yeah, I think that he's really struggled on the road. So Wednesday's going to be a big test for him. And I think right now with the way it's been going, if he has a tough one on Wednesday, I think the Twins might have to just, you know, bring up Hughes and activate him and have him take Pelfrey's spot. Because Pelfrey could actually probably be a helpful reliever just because, like I said, he's got that really good fastball. He probably could even throw maybe a little bit harder in a relief role and kind of not have to use his off-speed as much as a reliever. Or if he did, it'd only be kind of for one inning instead of having to mix it in, you know, for 5-6 innings, which he really hasn't even reached recently. So I kind of at this point think that Hughes will probably replace him, but it is hard to say if he throws a gem on Wednesday against the Royals and gets it back. Maybe they'll keep him in there because Tyler Duffy is a rookie who has been great recently, but he's also thrown about 170 innings, which is about already, I think, 20 more innings than he did last year. So at some point, they might have shut him down late in the season. The Twins haven't said that officially yet, but certainly a chance of that. So it's definitely kind of going to be interesting to monitor to see how it all goes once Hughes returns, whether it's going to be Pelfrey or potentially even Duffy.
Yeah, a lot of pressure on Mike Pelfrey on that Wednesday start to see what the Twins do moving forward. And, Rhett, just to wrap up here, we talk to you and the other 29 team reporters every single week for these podcasts. And, you know, at this time of year, there are some beat reporters covering teams who are in the thick of a playoff chase like you, and others are not so fortunate. So I guess my question is, how fortunate do you feel to be in this position, rather unexpectedly, covering a team every day that is right there on the hunt for a wild card?
Oh, yeah, it's a lot of fun, especially for me because I've been covering the Twins now since 2011, which is right when they kind of went south there a little bit. 2010, you know, they'd won the division title. They go right into the next year and lose 99 games, and then they hadn't even won more than 70 games since 2010. So for me, this team is already past 70 wins. They already surpassed their win total from last year. It's the most wins they've had since 2010. So for me, it's fun to kind of finally, after the last 4 years, to be in my fifth year on the beat, and to be around a winning team and a team that, you know, decided to be in this playoff hunt and to cover games that are meaningful in September. You know, in the past in September, the only games that were kind of meaningful were the ones where maybe the Twins could play spoilers against the Tigers or a team like that. Whereas now, even if the Twins are playing a team that's not in the hunt, they're still meaningful for this team. So it's fun, you know, and there's a lot of pressure, but the players are all, you know, excited about it and definitely in a kind of good spirit, just knowing that these games all matter and this is a winning team and if they're kind of ahead of schedule and that, the future should be bright for this team. So this is a team that was supposed to be better next year, and it should be better next year, and kind of going forward once guys like Buxton and Sano really start to figure it out, maybe even guys in the minor league, some of their top prospects that aren't even here yet, like Jose Berrios start to join this rotation. So it's an exciting time for the Twins, and for me as a reporter, I'm definitely loving it.
So were you concerned that when you came on board, the team went in the tank, that this was somehow your fault?
Oh, absolutely. On Twitter, I mean, for years, I've always been the cursor, the jinx and all that stuff. So I've definitely heard that plenty over the last 5 years. It's kind of fun to actually see finally this year, I'm not the jinx. I'm not the one on the team losing the games or anything like that. It's not me, but I definitely heard that a lot. It's always been kind of funny to hear that over the years now.
So no books coming out in the near future, The Curse of Rhett Ballinger, correct?
No, hopefully not.
Good. That's good to hear. Great stuff as always from you, Rhett. Twins reporter Rhett Ballinger joining us here, and we'll do it again next week. Thanks a bunch. This is Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras Minnesota Twins.
MLB.tv Premium, the number one live streaming sports service, is celebrating 13 years. Watch every out-of-market regular season game live or on demand in true HD. Real-time highlights, live look-ins, pitch tracking widget, and more. MLB.tv Premium includes a free At-Bat 15 subscription. Watch live baseball on over 400 mobile and connected devices. Watch at home, in the office, or on the go. Every night, on every device. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Visit MLB.tv for details.